From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a thing.
Look out below, the jobs crisis, the stock plunge in Europe on the edge, plus Obama drone warrior, sugar nanny Mike Bloomberg, the Scott Walker recall clash, and John Edwards walks. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, your moderator in the reasonably extreme political center. Robert Scheer is here on the left. Returning contestant Joshua Trevino is on the right. VP of Communications at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Action-packed week as we go to air on Friday. The jobs report, dismal, only 69,000 new jobs. Remember, it takes like 130,000 a month to just to keep pace with population. We need something like 300, 350,000 a month for 5 years to get unemployment back down to anything like what we used to think of as normal. I'm looking over my shoulder. The Dow, as we go to air on Friday, down 2%. 239 points. Robert Scheer, why don't we start with you? And obviously, Europe remains on the edge with, almost no one who, you know, the folks, the analysts I read and respect, feeling like we're really choosing between grim options there. Talk about where we are now, Bob.
Well, I think the epithets on Barack Obama, who I thought was going to win because of this economic news, is going to be he saved the banks, but the banks didn't return the favor. And what has happened is that we got out of the worst of it because international trade was strong, consumption was strong, and the stock market had a certain buoyancy. But the fundamentals are lousy. Housing is still in the toilet. It's just totally depressed. Without housing, you don't get consumption. You don't get the jobs. People's net worth is down seriously. And so I think, right now, the international market will not float us. China is contracting. India is contracting. And so what you have is a situation where suddenly stock valuations are reflecting reality rather than hope, and things look pretty dismal.
Joshua, what do you make of these numbers in the news?
What can one say about the worst economy since the Great Depression that hasn't really been said before in the past 2 years? It's just terrible news, and it goes beyond the merely actuarial. What's reflected in these numbers is real misery and real homes that are broken as a consequence of the lack of jobs. You know, I think the killer for the president is in that infamous curve that his White House put out back in early 2009, promising that by May 2012, unemployment would be at 5.7% if the stimulus package was passed. Now we're at 8.2, and the gap between that number and the other is the gap between hopes and reality that's likely going to sink him come November. This is the first time, by the way, that I actually think Mitt Romney has a path to victory. I did not think so before.
You know, I was listening in the car on the way over to the studio. Obama's out today. I think I forget if it was in Minnesota. It was in Minnesota because he was referring to infrastructure stuff there, talking about why he's asked Congress to pass these jobs programs. They haven't passed these jobs programs. You know, the truth is, I mean, just a couple of thoughts. Obviously, this is dismal. Obama did come back last Labor Day with a quote-unquote jobs plan, but even then, the outer limit of what that would have done, and the Republicans aren't going to cooperate in passing it, would have been 1 to 2 million jobs. That was the consensus estimate. We've got something like still 23 or 24 million people who want full-time work who cannot find it. That includes the unemployed plus those who are underemployed, want full-time work, are only able to get part-time jobs now. The tragedy is, with long-term interest rates so low, I mean, because of the European situation, the flight to safety, quote-unquote, that's led long-term treasuries to come, 10-year treasuries are like, what, 1.5%? I mean, it's historic. Everybody should be refinancing. Right, should be refinancing their mortgage if they could. This is the time to borrow big, for the public, to borrow big, build the infrastructure where we have this huge, you know, multi-trillion dollar backlog of infrastructure projects that need to be done, and yet we can't do it because the Republicans won't cooperate, because Obama doesn't propose stuff big enough to try and galvanize public pressure against them and overcome the opposition in Washington. And we're sort of sitting on our hands with Republicans having to be gleeful about the fact that this gives them, Bob, a chance to win.
Well, as a matter of logic, the Republicans should not have a chance to win because they're advocating a more disastrous course than the president has followed. And first of all, this happened on their watch. So as a matter of logic, Romney should not be a credible alternative. He's a vulture capitalist. He was the kind of person who exacerbated this problem. And everything he's advocated has been basically do less than Obama did. And he certainly he didn't even favor helping the automobile workers and bailing out that, which is one of the bright spots. I mean, we do auto sales are up. America is back in the car business. And there are, you know, and here's Romney. He would be railing against that. That is, by the way, today as we go to air, one of the bright spots. Auto sales are mm-hmm. way up. And jobs are coming back to some degree. But the problem is that Obama inherited this mess. And what was just said before on the conservative side is absolutely true. He did not recognize the suffering, the pain. And people are in pain. 50 million Americans have lost their homes or are in imminent danger of losing them. You know, some very large percentage are underwater, and they're throwing good money after to bed, and people can't find work, and when they find work, it's way under the pay scale that they are entitled to because of their skill set. When you have that much pain out there, and people are going to accept demagogues, they're going to accept scapegoating, they're going to blame immigrants, they're going to blame gay marriage, they're going to, you know, find all sorts of hooks to blame. And the problem is that Obama is not in a position to advance a progressive narrative of how we get out of this. His stimulus was very weak. He focused on health care, which was the wrong issue to put your credibility on, instead of focusing on the banks. He didn't get anything back from the banks. And even at this late day, we don't have mortgage relief. We don't have helping people stay in their homes. So there's nothing coming from the Democratic president that would relieve the suffering that is palpable out there, and that affects the real economy in terms of consumption.
And Josh, as Krugman has been pounding his drum repeatedly, Ben Bernanke and the Fed are not going to take more extraordinary measures, since Washington's not going to do anything new on the fiscal front for the next 6 months or 8 months until we're through the election and we have the next president inaugurated. And even then, who the hell knows what's going to happen? The Fed's kind of sitting on its hands, feeling like it's done what it can do. Where do we go from here?
I mean, I think this depends. Well, before I answer, I want to reflect on this marvelous, delicious historical moment of Robert Scheer recycling Rick Perry's line about Mitt Romney as a vulture capitalist. I think that's just a wonderful circle that's been completed in some meta sense. On the Federal Reserve, it's become as you well know, and as listeners well know, kind of this punching bag for the mechanism that just refuses to work. If only the Fed would do what it needs to do, then all would be right and good. I don't think that's really entirely accurate. I mean, the Fed, depending on what you think the mandate of the Fed is, and obviously it has its formal mandate, and then it has its informal mandates, and there's some, I think, legitimate contention over that. Policymaking, I think you're right, Matt. Policymaking, effective policymaking, is basically going to grind to a halt until November, and maybe even until Inauguration Day, whoever gets inaugurated on Inauguration Day. So the prospects for anything happening meaningful, good or bad, in the remainder of 2012 is pretty dim. We're likely going to see a procession along the same course, and that course, as we've seen, leads downward.
Let's talk for a second about Europe, because, there's still huge shoes that could drop there, which on top of the news we're getting domestically spell trouble for the economy, for markets everywhere. Bob, any sense of, it seems like, you know, you've got different analysts now thinking it's 50-50 that Greece may end up needing to exit from the euro. If that happens, the pain and the depth of the depression in Greece becomes almost hard to fathom. But the question of whether Europe can get its act together to provide some continent-wide European deposit insurance so that there isn't runs on banks in Spain and Portugal and others deemed potentially weak. There's a potential dominoes falling here that is frightening.
Yeah, let me just for the record say vulture capitalism pinned on Romney came from Ted Kennedy before it came from Perry, and well documented in newspaper accounts and so forth. Every time the man is run,
fine.
The record is very clear. Yes,
I stand corrected. Yes, I was not aware of that.
Get your vulture pedigree.
But also, unfortunately, it's an accurate description of a man who might be president and who's running on that sorry record. Let me say something. This is a Made in America crisis for the world. Whatever happens in Europe, whatever happens in India and China, the fact is that it was tipped. The world was tipped into this enormous instability by basically collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps that were swirling around the world, that were originated fundamentally on Wall Street, a result of radical deregulation. And so, you know, what we're seeing is the rest of the world scrambling to survive somehow. And that includes, by the way, Greece. Everybody forgets Goldman Sachs took their airport revenues and train revenues, bundled them into collateralized debt obligations and told them, go on, keep spending. We can get more money for you.
A lot of shenanigans and corruption in Greece. Don't put it all on Goldman Sachs.
I understand there are a lot of shenanigans and corruption in world history. But what made this crisis real was these phenomena of bets on bets that were basically invented in Wall Street and accepted as a result of radical deregulation. We should just be clear about that before we get into blaming all these other people. What they are doing is in desperate. And Greece is such a small part of the picture; it's not even significant. You should be much more concerned about what's happening in India and China with their sales, their ability to function in the world economy. If China, I said this last week and I thought about it after the show, you know, was that an exaggeration? Then I decided, no, it wasn't. I said, if China really goes down hard, we could be contemplating the Great Depression, okay? Because it's that important to our economy now. If they start having to call their debts with us, if they cannot be the kind of supplier that we've counted on, we are in real big trouble. They did not create the problem. We did.
I need to correct. I want to disagree with a piece of that, Josh, before I turn it off to you, which is, no doubt, I agree with you. A lot of problems that the U.S. May have contributed to this that we've covered. But the United States did not create a situation where the European banks were more thinly capitalized than our thinly capitalized banks. It wasn't the U.S. that led European regulators to say they didn't need to hold any capital against all the sovereign debt they have, euro-based sovereign debt. And that's why it's a huge banking crisis tied to a huge sovereign debt crisis in Europe. The U.S. didn't cause that. It turns out that their sense of stewardship among fiscal elites, government elites, and banking elites was even shoddier than ours, Joshua. And that's why they're at the precipice. If anyone had any sense of stewardship and actually ran banks with some kind of capital behind it, so they weren't just maximizing their bonuses and jacking up their return on equity so they could pay themselves more, we wouldn't be in this crisis.
What happened to our being the alternative to those screaming talking heads?
I'm not. I'm just we're the passionate talking heads.
I see. All right,
Josh. Last word on Europe or whatever you want to say on the economy.
Look, all I will say is that Spain, and especially the botched bailout of Bankia in Spain, continues to be a tremendous concern. 100 billion euro capital flight revealed in the past 24 hours from Spain. I think that is where, even more so in Greece, the peril for Europe lies, and therein the peril for the United States.
And how can they get, I mean, can Europe get its act together to do pan-European deposit insurance, pan-European Eurobonds? I don't know. Let us know what the Germans are willing to do. Yes. Let us know what you think the Germans are going to do at kcrw.com/LRC. Up ahead, Obama drone warrior, Mike Bloomberg nanny, and the Scott Walker recall. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for The Washington Post. Robert Scheer, editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. Joshua Trevino, special guest, VP of Communications at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Bob, we got a lot of ground to cover in the second half, but as I always tell my daughter, there's no limit to what you can accomplish if you're willing to compromise on quality. Obama, the drone warrior, big New York Times piece this week, Bob. I know that that was a big interest to you, Obama kind of hand-picking and supervising the selection of who we go after with drones. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, it should be of big interest to anybody who cares about the rule of law. And this is what we're really talking about, the right to kill, including American citizens in countries that were not at war without any charges. What was depressing about it was, from a journalist's point of view, here was the New York Times, which has long tried to maintain the highest standard of reporting. This was clearly a leaked story. involve classified information of the highest order, yet no one's calling for anybody to be put in solitary like Bradley Manning. Nobody's talking about the leaks. We were taken in by 30 key advisors, former and current, to the President of the United States into the most secret meeting, how to respond to international terrorism, who the players are, what the conversation was, what the President says, what the strategy is. And there's no cry at all about this breach of secrecy. Why? Because it was convenient to the President. And the New York Times ran with a story, as I pointed out in my column, the Rambo Obama, which is going to be the card he's going to play in this election. He's going to be the militarist. He's the guy who protected America. He's the guy who got bin Laden. Forget the economy. Forget any of those issues. And, you know, and they planted the story. And what and the story, as it reveals, shows that Obama is incredibly cynical. The Times equates realism with hypocrisy. And the naive people are the voters who actually thought this guy meant what he said. If you read the text of that story, it's a study in cynicism. And no wonder people turn off politics. You elect this guy because you think he has some constitutional law ideas that he'll stand by. And it turns out behind closed doors, and he's very happy to brag about it. He doesn't care about any of that. Any of it. So what happened to, you know, due process? No, you get a Department of Justice memo, just like George W. Bush did to defend torture. He's now got a memo that somehow makes it sound all right that with what he did.
Josh, your thoughts?
Clearly a planted story by the White House with the cooperation of New York Times and a very interesting look at President Johnson's micromanagement of the war. Excuse me, President Obama's micromanagement of the war. It was
a Texas Freudian slip.
I'll have to completely unintentional. I'll have to dissent from Mr. Scheer on one big item here. I think you know, this is obviously intended to make the president look good in election year, and I think it's going to work. I think most Americans rightly understand that there's ample precedent in history and in the constitutional system for making war, even upon American citizens who make war upon the United States. You look back to the San Patricios and the Mexican-American War. You look at the entire Confederate armed forces. And unless you believe that Abraham Lincoln should have deputized federal marshals to go arrest the Army of Northern Virginia, it doesn't really make sense that President Obama should do something any different than any of his predecessors have ever done.
And does that mean, Bob, and we can't go fully into this, but are you opposed to all drone attacks?
Yes, I think that we're talking about here acts of war, which are supposed to be sanctioned by Congress. We're talking about using drones in a way to I don't know. I'm dumbfounded by what was just said, that you can just kill any. First of all, the New York Times doesn't even use alleged. One of the American citizens that was killed was not even on any terrorist watch list. No one's come up with any evidence. That this person. We're talking about destroying families. We're destroying villages. We're destroying, you know, we've seen it throughout the world now. Scores of cases where you have to admit, no, innocents were killed. No, there were actually no terrorists in the area. So what you're basically saying is in the name of this war, which, you know, the war on terror, so that means we're permanently at war forever, allows you to violate every standard of going, of acting in a violent way. It's appalling.
Yes. Prior to the D-Day invasion, the U.S. Army Air Forces in Europe undertook a 60-day interdiction campaign throughout the French countryside, intercepting road and rail traffic all over the country, killed thousands, we'll never know how many, thousands of French civilians. No reasonable person has ever disputed the morality of these things because we understand that it was not intended to kill these individuals. They were acts of war in legitimate wartime. As are these.
But what is and, the wartime?
You know, it is. Where's the wartime?
Yeah, we have not. We haven't declared war. But what you're
right.
We
understand the axis of debate. Bob, we got other ground to cover today.
He's defining war as a permanent state of affairs that involves every single country at this time.
Your view is understood. We're going to have to move on for today. I do want us to talk about Mike Bloomberg, who made headlines this week. But let us know what you guys think about in left, right, and center listener land about. The big piece in the New York Times, the Obama extensive use of drone attacks at kcrw.com/LRC. Mike Bloomberg cracking down on big sugary drinks, making headlines. Jon Stewart had a lot of fun with this if you saw it the other night. But it's the plan is to, I guess it's banning large size, the sale of large size cups So people have to go back a second time, still not banning the drinks themselves, so that I guess in defense, Josh, against the libertarian attack, that you can still have this. I admire what he's done. I love the fact that, he puts the calories on all the menus in New York and that that is spreading. So I think Bloomberg's onto something. What do you make of it?
I think it's absolutely preposterous. This is just this is petty nanny statism by Michael Bloomberg, which has become his. You remember when Bloomberg was the great centrist hope for responsible governance in the U.S. and he was going to run for president on a third party ticket? This is Bloomberg's vision. Bloomberg is taking away your big gulp. It is what he has done essentially is levy on behalf of New York's upper crust, levied a regressive tax on the less affluent in New York, and it's just a preposterous petty thing to do. I'm appalled at such a narrow vision of governance, which you know, in fairness, New York has voted for multiple times. So be it.
But he's also, Bob, I love that he pushes these public health things because it changes the national conversation. It leads to people thinking about their food choices in different ways, and it's leading other cities to do the same kind of, you know, the trans fat ban, the kind of smoking bans that he's led on. What's your take? You look disgusted, Bob. You're still
no.
You want to take Mike Bloomberg out with a drone?
No, I don't have that ability to segue easily from.
I know, you're still
killing,
emotionally in the last topic.
It's not a question of emotionally. It's a question of segueing from probably the most serious threat to freedom we have, which is unbridled imperial power, and then talking about a mayor in New York who's trying to change the law in ways that I don't agree with, by the way. I'm sure he'll be rebuked. I'm sure that there are avenues in Manhattan and New York in general for redress of grievances. There's no avenue for redress of grievances on torture, on the use of presidential power. That's the really serious issue here, but we're distracted by those other issues and we ignore the important ones.
So that you've got nothing to say then on Mike Bloomberg and the public health?
I think the people in New York can take care of that, that they have the information, which they don't have on national security matters. They have the ability to redress grievances, which they don't have on national security matters.
Well, I applaud Bloomberg for trying to lead on this stuff, walking into what he knows will be the teeth of big controversy. And if we don't get the obesity epidemic under control, and what he's done is actually modest, just makes people have to think about going back for a second cup. If we don't get this stuff under control, the health costs, it's going to come out of education, it's going to come out of a lot of other stuff. It's a big epidemic. Let us know what you think about Mike Bloomberg, Sugar Nanny, at kcrw.com/LRC. Scott Walker, back to you, Josh. Big recall clash, the election on Tuesday. It looks like Walker's up a couple of points in the latest polls, a lot of outside money. What are you looking for in this? What's the significance?
Yeah, you know, the New York Times had this very charming write-up this morning in which it acknowledged that Tom Barrett has trailed in some public polls, was the phrase that they've used against incumbent Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. The fact is that Barrett has been behind in every poll for the past 4 months. He will likely be behind on Election Day. I really do think that Wisconsin, coming on the heels of last year's failed attempt to change control of the state Senate in Wisconsin, Walker's victory coming up, and I do confidently predict it's going to be a victory, is going to be the picket's charge of kind of the union/democratic machine in America. If they can't win in the upper Midwest, it's going to be very difficult to win elsewhere.
Bob, what do you make of the Wisconsin
fight? I agree that it doesn't look good, and I think it indicates the division. We have false consciousness among American workers. Yes, if you are a government employee, which is particularly at stake here, I see it in Los Angeles, you see it elsewhere, you know, you've had some furloughs, but basically you've got something no one else in America has, which is job security. And you're not hurting during this recession. You're increasing parking tickets so you can not have layoffs. For the other people who don't have these government unionized jobs, which is the last big bastion of unionization, you feel out of it. And you wonder, why do these people have their pensions and so forth? And you're susceptible to a right-wing argument which says it's the fault of the unions. It's not the fault of the unions. The problem is we don't have strong unions in the rest of the economy. And so it's easy to play the blame game with government workers. And I think that's what's afoot in Wisconsin.
One thing, we're going to have to move on in a sec, but one thing that's always been curious to me is it correct that the rights that federal workers don't have the rights that they're talking about in Wisconsin? I'm always curious about the fact that the bargaining ability of the federal workforce, which is unionized and which Obama presides over, I mean, they've got less than what even what Scott Walker has changed. Am I right about that, Josh? Do you know? Because it always seems like there's a heated clash for reasons I understand But the bigger picture is there are a lot of public workers who, at the federal level, who don't even have the rights that we're talking about. And no one says a peep about that.
I have read that, but I will not claim to be an authority on that. I don't know how it compares to Wisconsin state worker rights.
Bob, are you the answer man?
I'm not the answer man, but I happened to work my way through college in the post office when unions were still very weak, and the unions became stronger. And what happened on the federal level is the ability of the unions to lobby the federal government and to protect workers' interests. And there became a much more active presence in the workplace of these federal unions. So they're by no means push over a week, but they were able to accomplish their gains until recently. Now the post office is being devastated, and they'll probably lose all of those gains. But they had some stability as a result of the union movement.
Obviously, there will be analyzing, I'm sure, this bellwether recall election next week. Let us know what you think at kcrw.com/LRC. Just literally about 45 seconds, very quickly. John Edwards acquitted, basically, right? He got off on one count, mistrial on the rest. Does anyone care one way or the other, Bob?
Yeah, I do care. I thought it was outrageous that they brought these charges. I think they're dragging this guy down. I think it was a weak case. And for all of the cases the Justice Department should be pursuing against bankers.
Banks.
Let's put some emotion behind that. You know, the idea you go after Edwards, who is in this forlorn situation. I mean, clearly he's responsible. Clearly he's not to be respected. But the idea of putting this guy away for 30 years was absurd and, ridiculous.
Josh?
Well, I don't really concur with the premise of the laws that he allegedly violated, and obviously he was found not guilty of, or I should say innocent of at least four or five of them. So, yeah, he's out of jail, but I'm still not leaving him alone in a room with any loved one.
It's just the whole thing is frightening that this man was on the ticket, and at one point, you know, could have been if Ohio had gone a different way, a heartbeat from the presidency.
More frightening than Clinton? Didn't Clinton do something even more despicable than what Edwards did? Edwards was trying to protect his mistress.
We'll come back to that. I disagree, but we've reached that time once again for our famed Andrew Show, Left, Right, and Center, Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Literally, only about 15, 18 seconds apiece. Joshua Trevino, your soapbox.
All right. My rant is about the economy again. Unemployment is 8.2%. However, when we look at some of the breakdowns, among Hispanics, it's 11%. Among African Americans, it's 13.6%. Teenagers, 25%. So if you take seriously the commandment to whomever is least among you, do the best by them, this Obama economy must end.
Bob, 15 seconds.
Yeah, I think the idea of permanent war against terror is the most dangerous threat to democracy. And the idea, because it'll never end, you'll never win it. And the idea that you can continue to expend this tremendous amount of money, as George W. Bush did, and violate all of the norms of law, as George W. Bush, and we elect a guy who's supposed to be the un-Bush, and he turns out to be the Bush.
I just want to say that the tragic situation we're in, where we have the policy tools to do something about unemployment, which is a crisis that's going to blight the lives of a younger generation, blighting millions of families across the country today. The fact that we have the fiscal policy ability to do what we ought to, borrow at these low interest rates even more, do the kind of infrastructure and R&D and education stuff and public payrolls if we need to for a while, and we're not doing it, the Fed's not doing it, is a tragedy. That's all the tragedy we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Robert Scheer and special guest Joshua Trevino. Jacob Conrad produced today's program with a big assist from technical director Phil Richards. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Left, Right, and Center.
And oh, if we have a button that might break my heart. Oh, so if you like pajamas.
Pajamas.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling.
Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes and share your comments at kcrw.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.